Sean, welcome back from the Heritage Classic. Since we last did one of these, there's been a lot of news in the National Hockey League. Some interesting, some tragic, some really looking ahead to see what could be coming down the road in years from now. It's an interesting time in the NHL, along with some terrific races already heating up here, and we're only talking on November 2nd right now.
Yeah, well, we're 4 days away from 1 month into the season, right? And that's a pretty big point, right? When you get to that point, you'll have played 11, maybe 12 games, most teams, and you have an idea of who you are, right? So races are starting to shake out. Teams are starting to establish themselves, so fall by the wayside. You know, you look at a Bruins team that's the top of the Atlantic or a Calgary team that slid way down. Like, those point differences are getting big now. You look at an Edmonton Oilers team, how many points they are behind the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, these are important times, and I think teams are starting to realize that they can no longer be like, oh, we're somebody else. Like, we're going to be somebody else. This is where you get to the point where it's the Bill Parcells thing, right? You are what your record says you are.
Yeah, no question about it. Listen, we're going to take it onto the ice for sure, and we're going to have EJ Raddick from NHL Network join us here shortly. But I think there's two news stories that have been going on around the league, around the hockey world, Sean, that we need to hit on here, and they're off the ice. Well, one of them was on the ice. The tragedy involving Adam Johnson in Britain, losing his life from the skate cut to the neck. And it's really sparked the conversation in the National Hockey League about cut-resistant material, neck guards, call them what you will. The thing is, I think some perspective here, Sean, is this conversation is not new. It's been ongoing for a number of years now about cut-resistant material. And Gary Bettman mentioned this as well at the press conference, I believe, at MetLife Stadium yesterday. That would be Wednesday, that this has been ongoing. It's got to be a collectively bargained thing between the NHL and the NHLPA if they're going to mandate anything. But the material exists. The players know it does. Some players are just creatures of habit, and they don't want to test it out. More are. The Pittsburgh Penguins had a number of guys on the ice testing out, you know, neck guards, turtleneck, whatever it might be, for that cut-resistant material at the neck. They've been doing it at the wrists and at the ankles as well. It's not new. It's just unfortunate, as Rod Brendamore, and I was talking with him this morning over at Madison Square Garden, Rod Brennan was saying, unfortunate, and he's right, it takes a tragedy sometimes to crystallize things, and that might be what is happening here. And it's also a conversation of what happens now and at what levels are we talking about here as well. And his point was, if we're going to bring these types of things into mandate, if you will, you can't do it until you start working it in at the younger grassroots level. And then it eventually goes through. But it's not a new conversation. I think that needs to be pointed out.
Far be it for me to disagree with Rod Brendamore. He's a far smarter hockey man than I am. But this is at the grassroots level. It has been for years. Erik Karlsson talked today. He said, Sweden, you got to wear them in the men's league. I wore them ever since I was a little kid. I came to the NHL, I took them off. Mm-hmm. No more neck guard. You know, kids in America, in North America, play with full shields. The second they walk into the NHL, half Pfizer, right? They're going to take every advantage they can to be better, right, at whatever risk it might be. So I think when we look at this, you know, there's two things that have to happen. One, it has to be codified, right? The companies that make it have to be approved and they have to be on a list. And look, the English League, which I follow extensively, I'm a huge Belfast Giants fan and I followed them since 2010. The English League is mandating it. When they start playing again, neck guards, but they can't do it until January because there's no supply, mm-hmm. right? It's such a niche thing at this point. There's no business that was making money at it to have huge production. So these few select companies that make neck guards are going to have to go into overdrive now to meet the demand from youth players all the way up to professional leagues across the globe. So it's going to move slowly. I mean, let's remember, the first goalies who wore a goalie mask were pariahs. Can't wear a mask? That's not right. Now nobody could even imagine stepping on the ice without a goalie mask. The more protection, the better. So, you know, it's happening in the AHL now. The pants and the wrist guards were mandated last year. I think there's some neck guard stuff going on this year. I know the Providence Bruins have been experimenting with it and so on and so forth. So I think the momentum is getting there, and it is horrendous that such a tragedy had to happen for it to come back to the forefront. And you know, all the best wishes to his family, to that league, to the Nottingham team, to everybody involved in that tragedy. It's just almost incomprehensible. But if there's lessons to be learned, they're going to be learned and they're going to be applied slowly. And I think that's what Bill Daley has said. That's what Commissioner Bettman said. That's the way you have to move forward. It can't be a knee-jerk thing.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, I think you said it all right there, but it's just one of those things. We saw it with helmets. We saw it with visors. They eventually get grandfathered in. They become mandated. Now you can't imagine the league playing without helmets. And I think we can count on one hand how many guys are playing without a visor. And you can probably look, if I had to make a bet right now, I would say 10 years from now, there's going to be everybody, if not everybody, very close to everybody, be wearing some type of protection around their neck. It's just the way it goes, right? I mean, it has to go in stages, and like, you know, it has to be collectively bargained. But it's sparked a conversation, not a debate, a conversation about it. And it's been an ongoing conversation, sort of quiet. Now it's out in the public. And listen, you said it's an awful situation, but if any positive can come from it, more safety to the players will be that. And eventually, hopefully, that's where it ends up. You know, there's really the only thing preventing it now is the comfort level and getting used to it and the supply. It exists. You have to have the supply for it, and players have to get adjusted to it.
And they will. And once they see other players doing it, like, again, Erik Karlsson put one back on for practice today and said he wanted to try it and see how it felt. And, you know, I think as you go forward and you see players starting to wear it, not only in the NHL with their peers, like, oh, he's wearing it, then I can wear it. Even more so, it becomes more normalized for kids, right? They're forced to wear it, but they're looking at other players and saying, well, they don't have to wear it. I can't wait till I don't have to wear it. Like, nobody says, I can't wait till I don't have to wear a cup. Like, it's just, it's what you do.
It's what you do. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, there's nobody looking at an NHL player and saying, he's not doing it. I can't wait till I don't have to do it. So I think that's where it's at. Literally, it's going to become so normalized that nobody will even think about it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see where it goes from here, but it's definitely an ongoing conversation within the hockey world, not just the NHL, the hockey world. In the NHL, though, there was another off-ice news story. It came down Wednesday. Pierre Dorion is out as the general manager of the Ottawa Senators. Michael Andlauer, their new owner. It's been a rough couple of 10 days here to 2 weeks for the Senators. Shane Pinto's suspension, 41 games for his involvement in sports wagering, and now they get dinged a first-round pick in the 2024, 25, or 26 draft, one of those, that for their involvement in the Evgeny Dadonov fiasco, debacle, whatever you want to call it, trade in regards to his no-trade list, not being told about it, to the Vegas Golden Knights, who then tried to move him to the Anaheim Ducks. We know the story. Everybody listening knows the story, but Pierre Dorion is out, the last straw, if you will, with Michael Andlauer. I think that Pierre Dorion wasn't going to be a big part of the Senators' future anyway, Sean. Michael Andlauer, the new owner, came in and he's got his people and he's got his ideas. And I think Pierre Dorion deserves credit for building, you know, a team that's competitive, but it didn't seem like he was going to be long for the job. And this was, as Andlauer said, the last straw. So Steve Staios comes in. We'll talk about this a little bit with EJ Raddick shortly. Steve Staios comes in, and he's got a job here as now the GM, not just the president, to bring some stability and culture, if you will, or reestablish that within the Senators. It's a young team. It's a good team. It's a fun team. And now they've got to be able to build that within the walls of the organization.
I don't think he needs to build a culture. I think the culture's there. I think Brady Tkachuk's built that culture. I think what Steve Staios' job is to come in and finish the house. The foundation's there. All the studs have been put down. It's sturdy. They have the pieces to finish it. Now you need a finishing carpenter to come in and put all those nice sconces in and maybe a little back deck where you can have a party. That's what his job is. The main lifting was done by Pierre Dorion, and Brady Tkachuk made it very clear on Pierre's way out, you know, we're ever grateful to him. He drafted almost everybody in that room, right? He's the guy who set this all in motion, and now his job's done. He's been sent on his way, and there is a new guy coming in, and he's got work to do. But to me, it's not about culture. It's not about heavy lifting. For me, it's more about finishing now.
It is, but I think it's also, you know, your public look too, right? It's been a rough 10 days here for the Ottawa Senators, and they have to get over that. And I think we'd be naive, Sean, to be talking here and saying this isn't being discussed within the walls of that dressing room right now. The Shane Pinto's their teammate, right? I mean, that's okay. That's one thing. And now their general manager's out, and it's a changeover in structure, it's a changeover there, and maybe a new GM's going to come in. There's a little bit of uncertainty there for players that are there. The culture within the walls of the team, I think, is being built, not built, but being built, led by Brady Tkachuk. But the organization itself and the public face of the organization has taken a hit. And Michael Andlauer was free to admit that. They have to live with that. So part of the job of Steve Staios now, not just as GM, but as president, and Andlauer as the owner, is to maybe rebuild an image a little bit, if you will, for what has happened here in the last little while. And that's what I mean. It's not so much the team, but it's also the public face of what this organization is. And they want to be above board, and they want to have a good culture, and they want to set the standard. And that's what they now have to start doing.
You do that by winning. There's nothing else to do. The Ottawa Senators keep winning. We're not going to talk about any of this.
If they win, yes, but they're not quite in that. They're not quite ready to take that next step to winning, but they're on their way.
They get to choose. They're the ones that are going to define the narrative.
They are going to define the narrative, but it's also the public face of the franchise has taken a bit of a hit, and they have to rebuild that a little bit now.
If you say so, I say they just have to win.
That might do it enough. That might be enough. We'll see. You know who's winning? So we'll move on from that. We're going to get to EJ Hradec here in a little while, because we're going to talk. We talked to EJ about the Senators and Dorion and Staios and that situation as well. So you'll hear about that. Before we do that, though, there's one thing. The New York Rangers, Sean, 5-0 road trip. First time in team history, they've swept a road trip of five or more games. They go out west. They win in Seattle, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. They're 7-2. This is, by the way, that five-game road trip was coming on the heels of a 4-1 loss to Nashville, where they looked like they didn't even want to be in the building at Madison Square Garden on October 19th. Now they come home, winners of five straight. They play the Carolina Hurricanes tonight, Thursday night. This team looks like it's finally got some structure. It looks like it's playing the way Peter Laviolette wants them to play. Is it sustainable, Sean?
Well, I think it's sustainable when you look at the talent they have. Look, they made the Edmonton Oilers look like a minor league team, mm-hmm. right? And when I was in Edmonton for the Heritage Classic, it was scary to see that on Thursday night and wonder what you were going to see on Sunday in such a big stage game. And Edmonton figured it out, and they came back. But, you know, to me, the Rangers are fast. They're structured now. I might say that they're structured for the first time since Quinn, right? Like they finally have an identity. When you look at them, you're like, oh, that's who the Rangers are. Unbelievable talent in the offensive end, a little more dedication to the back end. And their goaltending has been better than it was last year. So that's a pretty good combination.
They're really structured for the first time since 2015, to be honest with you. Like, that's the year that they all felt that they should have won the Stanley Cup. They lose in seven games to Tampa Bay. That's when Alain Vigneault was the coach. When David Quinn took over, they were a rebuilding team. He brought stability and structure, but they were a rebuilding team. So it was kind of all over the place at times, because they were not the team that – they were not a contender at all. Alain Vigneault was in there for 2 years, and it's hard to argue with – I'm sorry, Gerard Gallant was in there for 2 years. And it's hard to argue with what Gallant did. They went to the conference final. They won 99 games. They made the playoffs both years. But if you watch the Rangers now and you watch them under Gerard Gallant, they are a completely different team. Why? I watch them in practice sometimes. Their practices are hard. They're structured. there's discipline within the practices. When Gerard Gallant was right, and I don't want to make this a rip session on Gerard Gallant because, again, he won 99 games with the team and he took them to the conference final 2 years ago. But it was more of a free-for-all in his practices. They weren't – it was the same thing every day. Peter Laviolette brings new things in. It's a different approach. You ask the players that they have to play within the structure that Laviolette wants them to play or else it's going to break down horrifically. And they're playing within that. They did that over that five-game road trip. Now, I think it's sustainable too because they got a lot of talent and they're getting what they need to do. They're understanding it. But it's just a vastly different looking team now from what they were last season. And a lot of that has to do with the habits that they're creating in practice and the structure that they're putting in practice that's carrying into games. It's quite remarkable. And it really, again, it sounds like a rip session on the former coach, which it shouldn't be because he was successful with the team. If you look at numbers and wins, but they should have been way better than they were last year. And they flamed out in the playoffs against a very good New Jersey team. And now they're looking at a team like a team that can play this way for 82 games and longer, I think.
But will they? That's the question, right? Like, they're a better team than the New Jersey Devils, but they didn't want to play in the playoffs, and they couldn't right. play that the way New Jersey wanted them to. So, look, what Peter asks is very difficult. It's a hard ask. We're 28 days into the season. I can go without eating a candy bar for 28 days. Can I go 9 months without doing it? I don't know. Do we know if the New York Rangers can go 9 months of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. We're going to find out. I cannot go at around Halloween 28 days without eating a candy bar. I can't even go a day without eating at least a mini Twix or something.
I didn't say now. I said just 28 days at some point.
We got so much
maybe
candy.
For Lent.
We got so much candy at home. Anyway, listen, I talked about it before. We touched on it. EJ Raddick from the NHL Network joined us. We touched on a lot of things around the league. So here is that interview with EJ. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. John.
What's going on around the league here? What is coming at you right now? Conversations you have around the studio or whatnot. What's come at you right now, maybe a little off the wall, you didn't see coming? Anything that's really caught your eye at this point?
Well, just coming off last night, I mean, how about a Ducks-Coyotes game that was really entertaining and really competitive and two teams that, hey, who knows, maybe they'll be in the playoff chase this year. I think the Coyotes have a little bit more of an opportunity because the division is such there where it's Colorado and Dallas. And then I think there's a lot of openings for that third spot. So, you know, maybe Arizona's the team that can get there. But I've been really impressed with Anaheim. I'll be straightforward. I'm a big Greg Cronin fan. I've known him since he was with the Islanders and as an assistant coach. I've always wanted him to get an opportunity. I felt he earned it. Coaching in the minors for many years. He coached at Northeastern for a short period of time, was an assistant coach, and I always figured he could be a really good head coach, and so far so good. They got some really good young players there. Mason McTavish, wow, the start he's had. So, those are a couple off the top. I mean, you know, at least in the West, seeing that, and, you know, Montreal plays, I believe they play Arizona, you know, on Thursday evening here, so for me, I mean, Montreal's been a great story as well. So, I mean, they went into Vegas the other night. They lost in a shootout, but they played a great game. So there's a lot of competitive hockey out there right now.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. You forgot the biggest part about the Anaheim thing. And you're right, good for Greg Cronin because he's coached forever and, you know, a hockey lifer. Frank Vetrano, nine goals, tied for the lead with Alex DeBrincat. Frank the Tank is rolling.
Yeah, Frankie the Rifle, getting it done. And, you know, he's working well with Strom out there and McTavish, and you know, those guys have been really good together. So you're right. I mean, Frank Vetrano is one of those guys. He's bounced around a little bit, but we all know the calling card, right? He can shoot the puck. He's got a great shot. I know from friends of mine up in Connecticut. He works out up there. He's another one of those guys. He's working really hard, trying to get better in his career, and he's found a little bit of a home now in Anaheim, and he's off to a great start. I mean, what, two hat tricks in the first, you know, 10 games of the season. So good for him. And good for the Ducks. I'll be curious to see if they can continue to be as competitive. But even the games they've lost, guys, right now, they have been very competitive in each and every one of those games. So it's a big improvement on where they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Anaheim, you can look at all these teams that you talked about, the Ducks, the Coyotes, and the Canadiens. You're looking at young, fresh legs. You're looking at guys who, you know, are pushing the pace of games, and that's what happens early in the season, right? I mean, we see a lot of that early in the season, and you look at it, all three of these teams, as we talk right now, are averaging 3 goals per game or more, and all under 30 shots per game, or you know, as well. So they're scoring, they're getting opportunities. Of the three, Anaheim, Arizona, Montreal, EJ, is there one that you look at and say, that's sustainable? Or is it these three teams we're looking at and saying, they're great early season stories?
I think I would say they're really great early season stories right now. I'd have to see more. I mean, I'd love to see it be sustainable for all three. I mean, I do think all three have a chance to be really competitive on a night-to-night basis. I think, again, Arizona is, I think, in the best spot because of the division they're in. As I said, I see Colorado and I see Dallas. And then after that, I think the door is open for a lot of competition amongst those other teams. And Arizona's, you know, Arizona was kind of a wise guy pick for a lot of people early in the year because they went out, they added some, I would say, some more pros to their group, right? They were less of a young team, more pros. And Keller's obviously a star that emerged over the last couple of years. Logan Cooley had his first goal last night. Wow, what a goal for Logan Cooley in that game, his first goal. That was a memorable goal. You know, I think they've got more of an opportunity to be more sustainable, but I'd have to see a little bit more. And I would say this, all three of those teams, and this includes a bunch of other teams, you know, they're a little thin, right? Because those are teams that are trying to push forward. Any kind of injury issues could really derail them. And Montreal has had a couple of really significant injuries already, so we'll see how things go. But it just makes for a great start to the season and some great storylines.
Logan Cooley only scores cool goals.
The only goals
he scored have been scene stealers, right?
That's right. So, that's right. In the preseason down in Australia, he had that crazy goal.
We've talked a little bit about the positive things you've seen, the surprising things you've seen. Yeah. I mean, maybe not as exciting or not as much what we want to highlight, but there's been some disappointments early in the season. What's been the biggest one for you?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, just having been to the Heritage Classic up in Calgary, and I mean in Edmonton, and I saw you there, Sean. Dan, I'm not sure if you were there. I was kind of in and out, but I did run into Sean there. Well, Sean's working. I know you're probably busy doing other things, but the Calgary Flames, boy, what a mess! I mean, that is. I don't know what Craig Conroy is going to do there as a new GM, but. You know, they've put a hold, apparently, on these ideas of talking about a new contract with Hanifin and with, you know, and with Lindholm. I happened to run into Noah Hanifin's dad, really nice guy up there. We got talking a little bit. You know, it's a tough time, right, for them. They got to figure out what the future holds for them moving forward. If I were the Calgary Flames, I would really have to consider moving into a rebuild mode because they got a couple of guys right now, Huberdeau and Kadri, on longer contracts that – you know, it's been a struggle for those guys. I don't know if they're going to get it turned around or not, but, you know, I don't think those guys are movable right now. I don't know if it makes sense to do a longer-term deal with Hanifin and with Lindholm. Nothing against those players. I think they're both terrific players. They could be really good assets in other places. But I look at the Calgary Flames right now, and I watched them the other day, and I know they were without Rasmus Anderson on the blue line. He was still serving a suspension. But I think there's a lot of work to be done there. So I thought they would be a little better. I guess you asked me what's a little disappointing. And obviously Edmonton had a very, very slow start. They got right against Calgary. They really dominated that game, even though it was close on the scoreboard. You know, so we'll see if they can push forward now. They got a couple more games this week. I'll be calling their game on Saturday, Edmonton and Nashville, for the NHL Network Showcase game at 3:00 Eastern. There's a little plug for that. But at any rate, yeah, those are some. But the Calgary Flames, I thought they would be a better team. And to me, it looks like they've got some significant things they've got to work through.
So here's the thing with Calgary that I find interesting, EJ, is they're generating – they have the puck. They're in the offensive zone. They're doing things that to get themselves there, they're just not scoring. Their shooting percentage is way low. They had 47 shots on goal against Dallas. They lose 4-3. I mean, like, so is it something we're looking at and saying – the team's a mess right now, or is it they just need some fortune to go their way? Because some of the analytic numbers, the underlying numbers, will tell you that Calgary may not be as bad as this losing streak that they're on. Yeah. but the results are what the results are.
Yeah. Yeah. What I saw in the game the other day was just a number of turnovers, and they got stuck in their own end a bunch of times. They were had the good fortune in that game of having two lengthy 5-on-3 power play opportunities, and they had several power plays in the game and opportunities to take advantage. And, you know, they couldn't do it. I think when they get to their forechecking game, when they can get the puck in behind defenders and really get to that forechecking game, that's where they had some success against Edmonton. Now, Edmonton isn't the most dynamic defending team, so that's where you can get in on Edmonton, is to get that puck behind the defenders and try to create offensive zone time. But, you know, they seem a little bit too much perimeter. And, you know, when I look at their team again, I mean, they've got to – Huberto and Kadri have to go. I mean, they have to make things happen for their team. I mean, they have to be guys going to make that thing happen. And neither guy has been very good so far. So, you know, maybe they'll get it going. But when I look at it, I'm really not ready to do any more long-term contracts with any players. I'm thinking about looking at the young players I have. I'm thinking about maybe what I could do with Lindholm and Hanifin as the season unfolds in terms of, you know, maybe moving them at the deadline. I just think they have a lot of reshuffling to do there. So, you know, analytics numbers, I mean, all these things. I'm watching that game from, and I was right against the glass calling that game with Dave Reed for NHL International on Sunday. And the number of misplays and turnovers by the Flames in that game, I mean, it was just, it was kind of mind-boggling to me how many times they just fed the Edmonton Oilers on the rush, which is probably not a good idea.
Even in their attacking end, they do the same thing. Like, they make too many passes, and then they try and make these hero passes. Like, I saw Edmonton play New York on Thursday, and New York won. It was part of their five-game Canadian swing where they swept, which was kind of unbelievable. But they beat Edmonton 4-0, and I think it was two, if not three, of those goals were cross the highway in front of the net passes where nobody was defended, because that's Edmonton's problem, is they're trying this new defensive system and they lose players all the time. But the Rangers had the skill to do it. Calgary tried the same thing and has tried the same thing against a number of teams, and they turn the puck over and they lose possession. So, like, they have a ton of offensive time and they have all these analytic numbers where you look at, and then they just make this mind-boggling play and all of a sudden you're going the other way. So the numbers can be as good as you want. We all know in this game it's a game of mistakes, and right now they're making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, you know, Sean, you saw the exact same game I saw on Sunday, because I just thought they overpassed the puck in the offensive zone. They tried to be too cute. They had a 5-on-3. I mean, I think they would have been much better off. I mean, they ended up scoring at the end of the second 5-on-3 when Weegar finally put the puck at the net and it hit Kadri and went in. So, I mean, I didn't think they generated enough attempts at the net in those circumstances. You know, they had gotten off to a tough start. They were down 2-0. They just didn't generate enough offensive opportunities with a two-man advantage. So, you know, for me, like I said, if I'm Craig Conroy, I got to take a good hard look at that roster. And I just think, you know, the goal at the end of the day for all these teams is to win the Stanley Cup. And I feel like that's a team that could, you know, they could be middling and float around for the next couple of years, but have really very little, if any, chance to win the Stanley Cup and just kind of get worse. I think what they need to do is really reassess, move the guys they can move. They got some really interesting pieces there. They might be able to move for some other players. Like, I really thought Mackenzie Weegar in that game played really well. He's a hard-working guy. He's a right shot D. He could be a helpful player. Maybe that's somebody that can bring you something back in return, helpful to kind of create a situation in Calgary. They're going to have a new rink there in a couple of years. Maybe you get on a different timeline there and look to rebuild towards the eventual goal, for which should be for everybody, just to win the cup.
Now, let's forget about the good play or the bad play. Just tell me about the Heritage Classic. It was the 20th anniversary. We were both there. I thought it was spectacular. It was balmy. I don't know if you think it was balmy standing right next to the rink with the wind blowing, but I was at the original one, and it was 20 below. This one was 30 degrees. So for me, it was T-shirt weather.
Yeah, it was, what's that, about a swing of like 50 degrees or something? Yeah. I mean, it was, I'm not a meteorologist by any stretch, but I was there too, that first one in 2003, and boy, it was cold. I was in the print media at that time, so I was in the safety of the press box in 2003. I can remember Sean wanting to go out. Like, I said, I'm going to go outside and just see what's going on with the fans out there. Because if, you know, people remember, there was a doubleheader that day. There was the alumni game, which was a big deal at the time. So much of a big deal that Mark Messier, who was still playing for the Rangers, flew in to play for the Oilers alumni in that game. And it was a regular game. And so the fans were out there for hours with two games. I went outside, Sean, for 5 minutes. I was done. I came running back into the press box. Being along ringside there with Dave calling the game, you know, it was cool. It was cold because you're out there in the elements for the entire game. But it certainly, we were very, very fortunate that the game was not played in the conditions that it was played in 20 years ago. I had a great time. I thought it was a great event. The league is unbelievable with these now. They've got it down to a science, the event group, Steve Mayer, and all the other people involved. I mean, unbelievable work they do on it. And I just thought it was colorful. It was festive. It seemed like the fans really enjoyed it. And I thought it was fitting. It was apropos to go back there 20 years later. And the Battle of Alberta, those two teams have never played in an outdoor game, which kind of surprised me when I thought about it. So I had a great time, and I thought it was a terrific event.
They look great on TV. And, of course, we go to Seattle next for the next outdoor game, the Winter Classic. And then two in our backyard, as we are here in the New York, New Jersey area at MetLife Stadium in February. So those should be fun as well. EJ, I wanted to get your take on Steve Staios. Yeah. Now, the job he has in Ottawa. We know the news, right? Michael Landlauer came out there, Shane Pinto suspension, and then the, you know, the Senators' role in the Dadonov trade a couple of years ago with the no-trade clause, and they're going to lose a first-round pick because of it. Pierre Dorion, and even Landlauer said it's sort of the last straw for Pierre Dorion, their general manager. So your take on what now, the job now for Steve Staios, who wasn't supposed to be the GM. He was not supposed to be that guy, but now he is in that role. For how long remains to be seen, but just his role and his job for the Senators as they come out of these issues and look ahead. Because this is a, let's be honest, this is a pretty good team, I think.
Yeah.
I think they have the ability to be a good team.
Yeah, Steve, call me. I'd love to come in. I love the roster. I love the players. I think this is one of those jobs. I remember when, like, Ray Shiro got the Penguins job in, like, it was like 2006 or 2007, somewhere when he first came into Pittsburgh, and it was like, what a great opportunity. I mean, you walk in, you got a young Crosby, a young Malkin, a young Letang, a young Fleury. I mean, those are the kind of opportunities you want to walk into. I don't know if this is at that level, but certainly with Tkachuk and with, you know, and Stützle and Sanderson and the rest of the group they have there, I mean, they have a lot of really good young players, and a lot of that should be, you know, give Pierre Dorion credit for his scouting staff. Now, they had high picks in some of those cases, but they made the right choices, and they've got a lot of talent there. I'm very bullish on the Ottawa Senators. I think this might have been inevitable when you get a new owner that comes in. Ann Lauer and Staios had a relationship from previously being involved in junior hockey. So I think, you know, this might have been inevitable for Pierre Dorion to kind of be the odd man out, but it gives Steve Staios now an opportunity and the owner to kind of vet potential GM candidates, have a really long discussion about it internally, and bring in someone that's their guy that understands what they have in front of them there. And, you know, the quest for the Ottawa Senators in the next couple of years will be looking to fit in those pieces that will make them go from a really promising group of players to a team that's going to compete for a championship down the road. And I think they have those type of pieces there. And that's the hard part. It's never easy when you're running these franchises, but I always feel like the easiest part is to go up there and say, you know, with the first pick, we take Connor Bedard. I mean, that's anybody. We could do that. The hard part is when you get those pieces, you've assembled them, what are the things you need to go from a good team to a championship team? We saw it in Tampa where Julian Brisbois went out and at the end made those deals to get like a Coleman and a Goodrow. And at the time, people weren't so sure. They thought they were giving up a lot to get those players. In the end, they were great fits, and that made the difference. That pushed Tampa Bay to that level where they could win back-to-back Stanley Cups. So I think it's a great situation there in Ottawa. I mean, they're going to have to shuffle some things around. They've got a little bit of turmoil right now. Obviously, the Shane Pinto situation, they're waiting for him. He's a really good young player. That suspension will elapse. I think eventually he'll get back in the fold there. I like their team, guys. I mean, I just think they're going to be a good team down the road if they manage it well.
And they're going to be hard to play against this year.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be a team where you're not going to be able to take 2 points. Brady Tkachuk and those guys, they just won't let that happen. Yep. And, you know, we talked about Craig Cronin earlier. Good for Steve Staios, too. Like, he's put in his time. He's paid his dues, and now he gets an opportunity to maybe reshape this team a little bit. I think there was a little bit of a dip, but the axis of change is certainly on the upswing for the Ottawa Senators, and there's a lot to look forward to there.
No question. I'm completely with you. Very bullish on the Senators. We'll see how it goes, though, with the kind of turmoil they're in right this moment.
And the thing about it with Pierre Dorion, too, like, we kind of all knew this was going to happen eventually, I think, right? I mean, he wasn't Ann Lauer's guy. He wasn't the guy for them. And I think you're right, EJ. I think he deserves credit for the team he's helped put together here. This was an opportunity to move on. I mean, they found the opportunity to move on from him, and they did. But it's a team that's got a lot of talent. But you mentioned the Central Division and how Arizona's got a chance.
Yeah.
That Atlantic Division
is not the Central.
Loaded.
Yeah.
It's not the Central. What's really your take on that?
It really is. I mean, it's funny because, right, we've had Buffalo, Ottawa, you know, Detroit as teams that we're watching, right? That group of three – we've been watching to see if they could break through, right? And I even now include Montreal, even though Montreal's got some injuries, and I think they're a little further along, but DeMarty Saint-Louis has those guys playing hard. Sean Monahan has really found his game again. He's healthy. I'm so happy for him. I love Sammy Montembeau. I think he's a really talented young goalie that doesn't get maybe enough attention at this point of his career, but keep an eye on him. Can those four push up and push out Tampa, Toronto, Boston, Florida, that group? And so that's going to be the challenge. You're right. It's loaded. I think every game in that division are going to be really important games. Those teams at the top are going to be really challenged on a nightly basis now by those other teams, as I mentioned. We've seen it already this year. Detroit has gotten off to a really good start so far this year. So give the Red Wings credit. I had Ottawa ahead of Detroit. But you got to give the Red Wings credit, boy. They've come out and played very well. DeBrincat has been, you know, lights out good, especially with Larkin. Shane Gostisbehere's come in and helped their power play. They're getting good enough goaltending right now. So that's going to be fun to watch, Dan. You're absolutely right. That Atlantic Division, like, those games are going to be a battle. Who's going to claim those three playoff spots? And will they get the extra team? Will they have teams 4 and 5 in the playoffs? I mean, last year we saw how it played out. Florida got in by a point. So, you know, and Florida's got to get through these next couple of months still without, you know, a couple of really key defenders. They're finding their way, but it's a challenge for them right now. But when they get those defensemen back, Ekblad and Montour, I mean, they're going to be more of a handful to deal with. So that division is a bear. There's no question about it.
And we all pushed Boston out.
Every year.
We all said Boston was done. No Bergeron, no Krejci. By the way, I did not say that, but it was the prevailing theory was that they couldn't survive these hits.
Yeah,
they're 9-1, 0-1.
Listen, that's a great thing for all these teams that can pile up points early. It is so valuable to have that cushion because adversity is going to come. You know, it's coming for the Bruins a little bit, right? McAvoy is suspended for 4 games. They're going to miss him. Grizzlick is out for a while. So that's 2 defensemen over the next 4 games. I mean, it's not inconceivable, you know, that they could really struggle in these couple of games. But to your point, Sean, Boston still has a couple of really good things going for it. Obviously, they got two great goaltenders. They're very well coached. They got a strong, sturdy defense when everybody's healthy in that group. They really got some high-end players on the wing when you think about Pasternak and Marchand, and they've got some good bottom six guys. They're just missed that hole is in the middle. And over a long period of time, right now, getting by, you get down into crunch time, will Don Sweeney have to make a move? I think he will. And like we're talking about Calgary earlier, I look at Elias Lindholm. He looks like a Boston Bruin to me. Now, can they make that work in the cap world we're in this year? I don't know. But, like, I think at some point they'll have to address that. You know, the kid Patras is playing very well for the Bruins right now, but I think it's a lot to ask a 19-year-old kid. We'll see how he plays out over the course of the season. But I think that's the area if they could fill that hole. I mean, even if they dropped off this year, guys, I mean, they could have been 35 points worse and still be a 100-point team. So, you know, the Boston ones, Sean, you were very astute to say that the Bruins are still going to be a hard team to deal with just because they have that culture and they have that experience.
Well, there's so much to look at right now in the league and so many good storylines early in the season. EJ, thanks for taking some time to go over some of them with us, all right?
You got it. You got it. Sean, good work out there in Edmonton.
Good stuff there, Sean, with EJ. I'm on with him on NHL Network every week to do our Super 16, and he just hammers me on a weekly basis. It's a lot of fun for me, really.
It's a bloodbath.
It is. Well, it is. And it's sometimes I end the segment and I sign off and I'm like dripping with sweat. No, I'm just kidding. He does hammer me, though. He does get me pretty good every week.
Dude, he completely annihilates you.
Yeah,
you
but he doesn't do his own.
You need to be better prepared.
I am prepared. He doesn't do his own. All he can do is go on the offensive. He just puts me on the defensive. Anyway, that'll be going on a little bit later today, Thursday, as we're recording this. So that'll be a lot of fun. But you know what? You were at MetLife Stadium on Wednesday, Sean. MetLife going to host two outdoor games. We're not going to talk about the football teams that play there because, boy, oh boy, that's not anything I want to discuss as a New York Giants fan. But the New York Rangers, New York Islanders, Philadelphia Flyers, and New Jersey Devils will be playing some hockey games there in the stadium series in February. What was it like? What do you think it's going to look like there, Sean? You were there. And I think these could be some pretty big games, don't you think, in February?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the schedule now, I mean, if you look at the standings now, all those teams are involved in the race. And can you imagine in the middle of February if that's still the case, right? You know New Jersey's going to be there. You know the Rangers are going to be there. You assume the Islanders are going to be there. Can the Flyers hang around? They think they can. But regardless, it's going to be amazing. Like, I've lived here since 1990. And, you know, I've been going to Giants Stadium to see the Patriots play, to see college football, to see college lacrosse, like concerts, whatever it is. And I never imagined there being a hockey game there. And then they do that layout where they put the rink, you know, with just the end board type of thing in the middle of the field. And all of a sudden you're like 78,000 people here to watch a hockey game. Like it's almost mind boggling.
And it's going to – look, I mean, these games are important. It's coming about 2 weeks before the trade deadline too. I don't think the Flyers are going to be in the mix. I think we're already seeing a little bit of the demise of the Philadelphia Flyers in just the past week, to be honest with you. I think they're going to be a hard team to play against all year, but I just don't see them being in the mix. I don't think they're quite ready for that yet. But the other three, yeah, absolutely. We talked about the Rangers before. The Devils are definitely going to be there. And the New York Islanders, again, they have to start scoring a little bit more. But the way they can keep the puck out of the net and the goaltending they get, you know they're going to be around. They're not going anywhere. Are they going to make the playoffs? I don't know. They could. I think it really depends on what happens, to be honest with you. I think it really depends on what happens in the Atlantic Division with the loaded division that we talked about with EJ. But the Islanders are going to be certainly in the mix. It's going to be it's going to be cold, not like Edmonton Heritage Classic 20 years ago cold, but it's going to be cold. I think it's going to – I love the outdoor games. We go to Seattle first for the Winter Classic between the Kraken and the Vegas Golden Knights, and then this one comes up, and it's the first time we're doing back-to-back, two games in 2 days in the same outdoor stadium. So that's another thing to look forward to.
Yeah, and I just think about, like, the tailgating, right? Like, yeah, it's almost going to have to be like soccer where you have different sections for the Ranger fans and the Devil fans and the Flyer fans and the Islander fans. And you know, but it's going to be great. And, you know, and every time I do something like this, I learn something new. And the thing I learned yesterday is Carl Banks, the huge New York Giants legend, hero of your youth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Number 58.
Was a hockey player first.
I didn't know that.
First sport he ever took up in Flint, Michigan. He wanted to be Bobby Hull, and then football and basketball stole his heart. But still, to this day, a huge, huge hockey fan. We had about a 15-minute conversation about he's a big Ranger fan now, about the Rangers and what they are and how exciting they are, and about Jack Hughes and how great he is. And like I said, a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, definitely. And Justin Tuck, a former Giants defensive lineman, he's at Madison Square Garden all the time, so I'd imagine he's going to be involved. He's a big Rangers fan as well, so that'll be a lot of fun. They're talking in February for that, for the stadium series games at MetLife. Let's
tickets
stick in
on sale now, Dan.
Get tickets, your tickets are on while sale now. That's right. I've already got my son saying to me, "You're going to get me in for those games, right?" I'm like, "Well, let's see what the ticket prices are. They don't just hand them out. You know what I mean?" That's what I try to tell him. It is a business. They don't just hand them out.
You're a big
Sean, let's stick in that division, though. the Washington Capitals on the ice. They've won a couple of games in a row, three in a row. But off the, now they've got the news here with Nicklas Backstrom taking what is, I mean, he's basically taking a leave from the team. And I think because of the hip injury, the hip surgery, he's just not responding. This guy is a legendary player for the Washington Capitals, underrated because he's played in the shadow of Alex Ovechkin his entire career. And he should not be underrated, but that's the only reason. He's not the first player that comes to mind when you hear Washington Capitals in this generation. That's Ovechkin, and that's rightfully so. But Backstrom has been a huge part of it, and it's hard to see a player of this ilk have to deal with what he's dealing with right now and basically be honest with himself and say, I need a break, and I don't know if I don't know, almost like I don't know if I can continue to do this, Sean.
Yeah, no, it's horrendous. And I, to be honest with you, I think he's the most underrated player of his generation. I'm not even reticent to say that. I don't even think there's an argument. Like, when you look at what he's done and what he's made Alex Ovechkin. Now, look, Alex Ovechkin is a natural-born goal scorer. But what does every natural-born goal scorer need?
You need a guy to get him the puck.
You need a guy to get him the puck, right? You look at Brett Hull when he had really good centers, 70 goals. When he had mediocre centers, 45 goals. Like, that's the difference right there. And that's what Backstrom is he's an elite visionary center. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, Alex Ovechkin, the premier scorer in the league. You know, it all comes so naturally to him. It all comes so naturally to him when the puck is always put right on your stick. And, you know, Nicky hasn't been bad since he's come back. He just hasn't been Nicky. Mm-hmm. And good for him. There's a lot of guys that can't do that, that can't say, I'm not me. Well, the next game I'm going to be me. I'm going to stick it out. And all of a sudden you get 40 games in and you're like, whoa, what's this guy doing? Why is he here? And Backstrom's not going to do that. I mean, I hope he could step away. I hope he can take a little bit of a rest, do some rehab, you know, work on those muscles and maybe give it another try. But if not, there's no shame there. The guy's had a legendary career. He's had a Hall of Fame career.
Right. Yeah. He has had a Hall of Fame career. He's second all time on the Capitals in points, games played. He's first all time for Capitals among assists. The guy is legendary. And I think he's Hall of Fame is certainly not out of the question for
a
guy like
that.
It's
not out of the question. It's a given.
It should be. But again, we're talking underrated. We're talking underrated. So it's not, he doesn't jump off the page because he hasn't been in the spotlight all his entire career, even though he has been an elite player his entire career. I will say, though, this, what he's going through now, Sean, it does give me reservations about Patrick Kane and what Patrick Kane is going to be able to do when and if he comes back, because Patrick Kane had pretty much the same surgery, you know, this past summer, and he's been rehabbing from it, and it's a really hard surgery to come back from, especially when you are a player like Backstrom, like Kane, shifty, you know, a shifty type of player that's been your career, being that elusive type of player. If Backstrom is really struggling, they're, I mean, obviously they're not the same, so maybe Kane responds completely different to it. And I hope he does, and he can come back and have a couple of more really good seasons. But it gives you reservations as Kane, who is still an unrestricted free agent, is pretty much come rehabbing from the same surgery.
And I'm sure teams are going to look at it and give it a second thought. But somebody's going to take a flyer on him. They're going to have to, right? The stakes are going to be too high, and the risk reward. There's almost no risk, right? There's money. Everybody's got money, especially late in the year, right? Everything's been prorated. Oh, I can find some money to pay them, and that's the only risk, and the reward is ginormous.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we'll find out with Patrick, but, you know, like I said, I hope Backstrom comes back. I hope he is somewhat close to what he's been in his past and he can go out on his terms. But if he doesn't, like I said, a legendary career. To me, a Hall of Fame career. I think anybody that would suggest that it's not, you know, I'll be happy to have a debate with him. We can do it right here on At The Rink. We charge admission for the first time, and we'll go from there.
Well, listen, I mean, if he can't come back, he's not going out on his own terms. Henrik Lundqvist couldn't come back, didn't go out on his own terms because of the heart. He's going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about that next week, Sean. But this was fun. We thank EJ and everybody out there. Enjoy the hockey.